Good afternoon and welcome aboard. Happy Friday to you. John McGinnis with you. News 93.1 KFDK live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app and your smart speaker. Hope you're having a good day. I'm starting out the program with sad news and a tribute to a man who is very, very well known in the legal community in Sacramento. Extraordinary gentleman and a fine lawyer. Terry Cassidy regrettably passed away this past Tuesday, just barely 66 years of age. Terry is going to come as a shock to many in the legal community who knew him and appreciated him, an extraordinary gentleman, and distinguished himself in his legal practice insofar as he took cases to the Supreme Court not just once, but twice, and actually prevailed both times before the highest court in the land. Actually, in one manner, representing the Sacramento County Sheriff's Department in the matter of Lewis versus Sacramento County, which set a precedent for police pursuits that stands today, successfully arguing before the highest court that the law enforcement agencies did not incur liability when engaged in police pursuits that in which the compliance was achieved with regard to policy, notwithstanding a tragic outcome. And then you may remember the guy, the Elk Grove activist whose daughter was a school in the Elk Grove, a student in the Elk Grove School District, that sued, because he objected to the Pledge of Allegiance. And, the school district fought that, and they actually prevailed ultimately after Mr. Cassidy took the case to the Supreme Court. It was determined that the father did not have standing. He was estranged from the daughter and her mother, and did not have standing in that. So in both cases where Terry Cassidy went to the United States Supreme Court, which is a rare occurrence unto itself for an attorney to have two such opportunities, but then to have success in each is extraordinary. More importantly than that, he was absolutely a terrific gentleman, just a fine guy, very bright. He was a character and an extraordinary good person, the father of four. In fact, his wife Elise taught my daughter at Loretto High School, and Elise made an absolute academic impression upon her and all the other students. And what an absolute sad tragedy! Terry Cassidy, gone at the age of 66, an extraordinary gentleman and a fine member of the legal community, and a loss in terms of a friend, and just an all around good man. Terry Cassidy, rest in peace, my friend. Very sad. And, you know, the common sense and the goodwill and the good nature that he brought to every challenge he met, I think, is something that we are in such scarce need of today as a society. So as I look at the things that are plaguing us across the country, we need more of that. We absolutely need more of that. Not just the wisdom and intellect, but the grace and charm. And we have countless cases to illustrate that, I believe. In fact, I want to talk a little bit about a situation that is kind of cropping up in school districts across the country, but the first one to take a very bold stand on it, I suspect it's going to follow in many other jurisdictions, but in Michigan's East Lansing Public School District, they have announced this week that elementary schools therein will drop Halloween and Valentine's Day celebrations. So in a letter reportedly sent to parents and shared by television station WNS, officials wrote that the decision was made due to concerns over hurt feelings and uncomfortable families. Well, that's part of life, right? It's part of growing up. It's part of developing the skills you need, the strengths you need to navigate the world and succeed, right? Each year, along with the fun of Halloween parties and parades, we also have students whose families do not celebrate or feel uncomfortable, or don't feel comfortable, rather, with their children participating in Halloween's festivals, it reads. Okay, why? Valentine's Day is another day in which school parties and the exchange of Valentine cards leads to unintended consequences, the elementary principal team said, noting that the exchange of Valentine's sometimes leads to classroom drama and teasing, and that some families and students do not feel comfortable with the idea of boys and girls exchanging Valentine's or participating in a celebration that focuses on love. For these reasons and more, this school district and the administration therein has decided not to celebrate Halloween or Valentine's Day in our elementary schools moving forward. They go on to write, while this may be a disappointment and or an adjustment for some of our students and families, at first we promise to continue to offer alternative days throughout the school year that are full of fun and learning for everyone. We're striving at the East Lansing Public School District to be a district that is equitable and inclusive for all families. That's the words of the assistant superintendent, Glenn Mitchum, who later told the Associated Press, noting that it's not uncommon to see students crying on Halloween because they don't have the same kind of costumes that other kids have, or they didn't bring the same amazing Valentines that others do. Anything you do in school, some kids are going to win the spelling bees, right? Not going to be me, but some kids actually win spelling bees. Some kids thrive in science and math. Some kids are athletic standouts. And for every standout, every person who meets attains new levels of success in those regards, there's going to be somebody who finishes last. Is that not a part of the educational process? He said that Halloween could still be observed through teaching practices. So I suppose that's the study of Halloween. East Lansing Mayor Jesse Gregg, who was sworn in August, took to Facebook on Thursday to comment further on the move. He said East Lansing families received a letter from the school district recently regarding the district's decision to stop using school time for Halloween and Valentine's Day. A mention of me in City Pulse article on the subject has led some people to believe that the city is planning to do something similar, so I'd like to clear that up, she said. I have mentioned to several staff members that I think our seasonal programs would be more welcoming if we didn't include things like pictures with Santa or the Easter Bunny. Yes, Christmas and Easter have become mainstream commercial holidays, but they are religious traditions, and including them in city-sponsored programs makes those events unwelcoming to large segments of our population. We can host a beautiful winter-themed festival without including religion. By the way, if they were to just simply say, we're not going to celebrate Halloween and Valentine's Day because we got a lot of reading, writing, and arithmetic to learn here, and we don't have time for that, I don't think I'd have an argument with that. I do think there's fun to come from it. But in terms of the very things they oppose, that is to say the differences, there's something to learn and, frankly, something to embrace. Now, I know there are religious beliefs that preclude some people from participating in these holidays. Well, that's an opportunity to learn a little something about the people around you. So if a child is a part of, I believe it's the Jehovah's Witnesses who don't celebrate these kinds of holidays, understand why. Explain what the rationale is for it. And my understanding of that is that there's no biblical reference to any days such as Christmas, for example. The true birth of Christ is not biblically referenced. So they don't celebrate Christmas. They don't celebrate birthdays because their belief is that that is not a significant event. And I assume they would ascribe the same application to Valentine's and Halloween. I don't even know that that's the case. But explain that. That's perfectly fine, and that should be accepted by others. That's where you learn to accept one another. That's where you learn that there are differences between and among us, but there are also common bonds that should survive all of that, like basic decency, kindness, compassion. Understand that you're not going to participate in this fun time, but that doesn't mean we can't be friends. It doesn't mean I can't do something for you elsewhere. Why is that not something that's easily obtained and implemented? It seems like it has since the beginning of time. What if you have a child in a classroom that's got food allergies and they can't participate in the distribution of candy or whatever kind of, maybe they're diabetic and can't eat sugared candies. Again, it's opportunities to understand that we're not all alike, we're not all the same, but we do have some common denominators that should actually strengthen us as a community. What do you think of this? That's the poll question today. You'll find it on the John McGinnis page at kpk.com. Do you think this is going too far? It's for me personally, it's not the fact that they're doing away with it, because I think you can make a good argument for that for other reasons. But the rationale behind this, if you have the overwhelming majority of the student body that is inclined to celebrate these various holidays, then why not allow that to occur? And again, identify those and show respect and decency and acceptance of those who see the world a bit differently. Isn't that an opportunity rather than something to avoid? You'll find that poll question on the John McGinnis page at kfbk.com. Also, the topic of conversation on the airwaves, at least for the time being, at 800-834-1530. I also want to talk about some other things that are happening in, in terms of California state government, some significant changes in terms of things the governor is signing. We'll get to all of that as we work our way through the program. Welcome back. Thanks for staying on board. John McGinnis with you. News 93.1 KFUK live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app and your smart speaker. Going to get your calls here in just a moment as it relates to the Halloween and Valentine's cancellations. I think that's very, very interesting. And again, it's for me personally, it's more the reason why than it is the decision to cancel itself. But we have a call from Kim in Sacramento who would like to offer a commentary about Terry Cassidy, who I referenced earlier, passed away this week. An extraordinary loss. Just a fine, fine gentleman from the law firm of Porter Scott. Retired about 4 or 5 years ago from the firm, but just somebody I held in the highest regard and just a wonderful man. Kim, good afternoon. Welcome to the conversation, and thank you for holding on.
Hey, Sheriff. I wanted to tell you a great story about Terry Cassidy.
Yeah, please.
First of all, I knew Terry from a gourmet dinner group that we were in. His wife, Elise, and I were in a babysitting co-op back in the day. But years ago, I read about a story in the Sacramento Bee while I was employed, which I'm now retired from, the Sacramento County Child Support.
Okay.
And I read about a strip search lawsuit that had been filed claiming that inmates had been somehow their rights had been...
Civil rights violation under 1983.
You were the sheriff at the time.
Yeah, very likely.
And so what ended up happening was I read that Terry was representing the county, and I wrote him a letter with permission, of course, from, you know, the higher-ups at Child Support. And he worked with me, and unfortunately the county lost that lawsuit. But because of Terry's work with the Department of Child Support Services, we were able to file a lien against those former inmates and intercept the money to go home to the family.
Yes, I remember that.
And it was almost $400,000 that we were able to get back to families. And because of my bringing this up, I ended up getting a gold award from the county for being innovative and trying to think. But Terry worked with me on that. And I know it was Lou Blanis was the sheriff, because I remember him now saying Lou's going to get a belly laugh, that we could go in and get that money. We also got money on a strip search lawsuit with the juvenile hall. And Terry was a nice guy. They're a great family.
Yeah, extraordinary people.
And when you started the show, I just said, I got a call and say, Terry helped get money home to families.
Yeah.
That, and these women would call up the office and say, why am I getting money? This guy's a deadbeat. He's never paid for years.
Because he won a lawsuit.
So we love your show, and thank you, and thanks for bringing up about Terry. We'll have a mass offered for him, and
extraordinary gentleman.
Every day.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. And as you point out, Terry was absolutely stood out among his peers in terms of his legal skills and abilities, but more importantly, an extraordinary gentleman. So an absolute devastating loss.
And a good dad.
Yep. Appreciate the call, Kim, very much. All right, let's get on to things like Halloween and Valentine's Day being canceled, shall we? Let's you got thoughts on that? 800-834-1530. Let's check in with Polo, patiently waiting in Sacramento. Polo, good afternoon. Welcome to the conversation. Thanks for holding on.
Thank you, Sheriff.
You bet.
I just find it so disappointing. Our culture is being just watered down or completely removed from the map here. Anything that has to do with the American culture, whether it's this guy that wanted to have the Pledge of Allegiance recited anymore, or standing for the national anthem, or standing for the flag. Here we are, Halloween, basic little holiday. Yes, there's all kinds of connotations as well. What about the evil part of, you know, people? I grew up Catholic, and, you know, same thing. They want to celebrate it sometimes, but still didn't turn me into some freak or some, murderer or anything.
No. Realistically, in modern times, in fact,
for the kids.
They've turned it into All Saints Day, I think, is the celebration that makes it, acceptable. And again, if there was a need to push it off and cancel it because it interfered with the academic efforts of the school, I'd understand that. But what's wrong with the idea of recognizing the fact that there are differences between and among the population, And rather than causing those differences to separate us, why not understand them, learn from them, understand why some of the others don't celebrate in the same manner that the majority do, and why it's forbidden in some cultures, and understand, respect that, and learn more about the people around you. Right? I think it's...
Join in and participate.
Well, yeah, of course, obviously...
You know, this is basic, integrating...
Yeah, I wouldn't want to see that happen if it went against... Wouldn't want to see it if it violated the religious beliefs of people. But at the same time, there's an opportunity to understand and respect that people are. They do. We all come from different places, and we have different beliefs and practices, and those should be respected. But don't throw the opportunity to celebrate away just because of that. So, great observation, Polo. I appreciate the call very much. Let's see if we can sneak Charles in before we have to go to break. Charles, good afternoon. Welcome to the conversation. Thank you for holding on, sir.
Yeah, thank you, Sheriff. And about these schools, I mean, this has been going on since the 70s. That dates me back to when I was in grade school. But the thing is, this has been going on for a long time. It's like a slow grinding down agenda of sorts to just make everybody conform into one little mold. And, you know our schools anymore, they're not really educational institutions. Mm-hmm. They're more like programming centers. And that's the bad part, too. I mean, Then you got the issue of these holidays around religion. And then you got the separation of religion, the church and state. You know, as far as schools being federally funded, it's a mess. It's all it is. But I agree with you, everything you're saying about the issue. You keep up telling the truth. People out there are listening.
Well, I hope so, and I think there's a benefit to come from it. And I'd love to see the focus on education to really truly cause these kids to embrace and understand and expand their minds when it comes to the basic fundamentals of reading, writing, and arithmetic. That's the job, right? That's the purpose. And, of course, things have become, I think, opportunities have become enhanced as well as challenges imposed by virtue of the advent of technology. So spend more time with that and bring people along. But when there's an opportunity that does not conflict with the academic time to have a little celebration and good time, then by all means embrace that. And again, allow people who want to sit it out to do so, and don't condemn or criticize them for that. In fact, it's an opportunity to instill the value that says you don't do that. You treat people with respect and decency and dignity, regardless of the differences they may have from your own. Welcome back. Thanks for staying on board. John McGinnis with you. News 93.1 KFBK live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app and your smart speaker. Shifting gears, we're going to talk about something that we kind of touched on a little bit yesterday, but I want to get into greater, do a deeper dive on it. And I will tell you very candidly, I'm going to throw out a question that may have an accusatory tone, but I don't think it's unreasonable. I think it's a part of what should be asked that may be difficult to get the question effectively answered. And I suppose it's possible. I think you have to be fair and say it's possible that there can be nothing but innocence involved in this. But I want to talk about this recent development where the California Attorney General, Rob Bonta, announced the filing of criminal charges in Sacramento County Superior Court against Alma Hernandez and Joe Moscosco as a result of a multi-agency investigation by the Tax Recovery in the Underground Economy, also known as the TRU Task Force. The California Department of Justice Bureau of Investigation began looking at a married couple after an investigation by the Fair Political Practices Commission. The FPPC investigation revealed that Hernandez, who was the executive director of the Service Employees International Union, SEIU, of California, allegedly embezzled money from an SEIU California-sponsored political action committee PAC. Okay, you following me here? The California Franchise Tax Board uncovered alleged underreporting of Hernandez's and Moscoso's income from 2014 to 2019. The Unemployment Development Department also identified that Moscoso's air duct cleaning business allegedly failed to report employees' wages from 2017 to 2020. So you have, there's a whole maze of state agencies involved here, and you have the leader of this public employees union that represents employees who work in each of these state offices, state agencies. So this the timing of this makes me suspicious, and I'm not accusing, as I say, it may sound like an accusatory tone, but it's one in which I'm voicing my suspicion. And I think we all should have questions about this from a political perspective. So this is an investigation that's been going on for a long time. You have all these different agencies involved in it. California Department of Justice, the Fair Political Practices Commission, the Franchise Tax Board, all looking at the different parts in this. And like, some of the violations allegedly go back to 2014. But what significant event happened about a month ago that was overwhelmingly funded by the union that this defendant now ran? Well, the recall election that would have removed Gavin Newsom from office. And obviously it didn't get close. So I'm not suggesting that it necessarily had a significant outcome in the election. Although I think the dollars contributed by SEU did. I think that's a fair bet. But was there an intentional dragging of the feet until after September 14th to make this filing? And these evidence to suggest to me that there's a high degree of probability that that's the case. Not possibility, but probability. These investigations have been going on for years and certainly many, many months, during which time evidence was being actively collected and analyzed and reviewed. And that package put together in time to have, you have the recall election took place on September 14th, and you have the filing of these criminal charges in Sacramento County Superior Court on October 13th. What did we miss out on something there? I commend the Attorney General's office, and quite honestly, I think it's the investigative and the legal professionals at the Attorney General's office that are there through various political administrations that run the organization. Those are the people that I think are worthy of respect, and they do their job well, regardless of what the political tone at the top may be. But perhaps the decision to release or to actually move forward, how long did this sit in somebody's in-basket before it actually wound up in the court? I think it's a very, very fair question to ask, for which I think there should be an expectation of a timeline on this at some point. I'd like to see a timeline. When did these facts come together? When did the information surface? What was done with it? What interviews took place? When did those interviews take place? What forensic evidence was collected in terms of the exchange of money, the transactions from a banking perspective? Timestamp those and share them with the public at some point. Now, this is going into a phase of litigation, which is not likely to come out now. But in the course of due process, it should. And next year, the voters will have a choice when it comes to who will serve as the next attorney general. Because remember, Mr. Bonta is there in an appointed capacity to replace Javier Becerra, who wound up in the presidential administration. So is that something about which people have a right to ask questions and be provided with information? So the Attorney General had a comment in terms of how he sees this. He says, and I quote, labor unions are an integral part of what makes California strong. Unions are working people standing together to demand fair wages, quality health care, a safe work environment, and the ability to retire with dignity. He went on to say working people deserve leaders they can depend on to help them achieve these goals at the bargaining table and through political advocacy, but also leaders they can trust. When there is reason to believe that the trust has been broken and crimes have been committed, we have an ethical duty to investigate. We owe that to the people of California. Thank you to our state partners for their collaborative partnership. Well, I think that's a great message, and it, I would have liked it a lot more if it came in what I believe would have been a more timely matter. Would it have changed the outcome of the recall election? I would be willing to, well, safe bet now, because nobody could prove or disprove it. I don't think it would have changed the outcome. But when you look at the enormous contributions that were made from this entity, this Service Employees International Union of California, you can understand why there would be an element of embarrassment there. But isn't it important? Isn't it a legitimate expectation from public officials that they produce information for public consumption at the first opportunity? Isn't that what we should have? I think it speaks for itself. Again, the FPPC played a part in this, and they had a comment on it as well. The chief of enforcement, Angela Brereton, offered that she says, "I'm proud of the work done by FPP and FPPC investigator Ann Flaherty and our team working in conjunction with the team at the Attorney General's Office and Franchise Tax Board in assembling this case." We always work closely with the Attorney General's office and other entities to ensure campaign finance laws are followed and campaign funds are used in the spirit they're given. That is to be used for political activity rather than personal gain. She went on to say, every campaign should know that it holds money in a form of a public trust, that it will be used as intended. It's unfortunate when that trust is violated, especially at a time when confidence in the system is already being questioned. We hope by holding people accountable, we can restore faith into the integrity of our political system. I couldn't agree more. But why not? Why, if this information was there, if it existed before, and there was an opportunity for it to be collected, analyzed, and presented, why was the timeline not advanced? Why wasn't it done at the first opportunity? Welcome back. Thanks for staying on board. John McGinnis with you. News 93.1 KFPK live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app and your smart speaker. Talking about this investigation by the Attorney General's office and a bunch of other investigative agencies and state government. I think they've done a good job. I think that sounds as though there's some evidence of righteous criminality. The case has been brought forward. It's been filed in Superior Court in Sacramento. All good. But the lingering question I have is this is an investigation that went on over a lengthy period of time. In fact, the start of this, very likely, in fact, some evidence suggests that it did predate the appointment of Rob Bonta to the Office of Attorney General. And so the timing of all this just causes me to be inquisitive. Why in the world would you not release this, file the charges at the first opportunity? Why not take this matter to court at the absolute first opportunity? And it looks to me as though there was about a 30-day drag on this. Wait until after the governor survives the recall effort, and then move forward. And there may be a good basis upon which the timing of this took place. But I'm suspicious, and I don't think it's unreasonable to be suspicious. I think each and every one of us should be suspicious. I think it's true in every administration, regardless of the partisan leaning of the leader of that organization, every administration, I should say. So how does this hit your ear? Do you have concerns about it? This is a kind of a big deal. Again, it's not just that SEIU is sympathetic to a particular party in state government. It's the party that holds all the marbles in state government. Supermajorities in both chambers of the legislature, every executive, every constitutional office in the state government. And they played a profound role in terms of contributions to Governor Newsom's efforts to stay in office. Significant contributions. So the timing of this, do you find it suspicious? Do you want to know? Do you think it's appropriate to ask those, to have those questions asked and answered? Let's get your calls. 800-834-1530. Dave is patiently waiting in El Dorado Hills. Dave, good afternoon. Welcome to the conversation. Thanks for holding on.
Hello, Sheriff. This is absolutely a partisan issue, but when the law is broken, the law is broken.
Yeah.
I am completely in awe of your ability to weed these things out immediately. It's always good to have actual, you know, page after page information. But whatever happened with Governor Newsom's sleight of hand when it came to avoiding taxes on his real estate.
Oh yeah, those are questions that that still linger.
The feds should be after that because it's IRS dodging that he did.
Yeah,
with his cousin.
Well, it certainly appears that that's the case. I don't know that it is, obviously, but it should absolutely be investigated. My strong suspicion is that there's enough smoke there that there's got to be more than an ember. I think there's a lot there.
There's an ever-growing fire under that, and us being held down by the neck, the scruff of the neck, with the COVID information is all distracting from real issues.
Yeah.
And
I agree.
And you know those real issues.
Absolutely. There are significant and legion of challenges in state government. And some of the behavior that's absolutely is in, not only can it not be defended, it's hard to explain in terms of the rational process that could have caused some of these courses of action to take place. But it's where we are.
That term, legion. Yeah, it reminds me of the biblical use of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Well, they are truly.
Legion.
Yeah. Hey, Dave, I appreciate the call very, very much, sir, and great perspective on it. And I see we have my old friend Congressman Osi weighing in on it. Congressman, good afternoon, sir. Welcome aboard.
Well, John, what a delight to be with you. I mean, looking at the clock, I might get the last word.
You will get the last word, sir.
I never get that at home, so
yeah,
I appreciate
it. Well aware.
Hey, I wanted to bring to everybody's attention this article that was in the Bee that Ryan and the other reporter put in the print. It talks about an investigation dating back to 2013 and 2014.
Yeah.
And I want to be clear, this is not a new subject. This item was being investigated potentially when Harris was DA, was AG, when Becerra was AG. And now Bonta, it's so egregious, Bonta has had to bring it forward. I mean, it's, think about this. In Sacramento, think about this. It's so bad of an issue that the Sacramento Bee actually had to report on it.
They had no choice. No, I agree with you 100%. And it's interesting to note, if you look, and you know the internal workings of the Attorney General's office, and over the years, it's been a while since we've had somebody at the top of the organizational chart that was really, truly committed to the idea of thoroughly investigating and prosecuting cases. The saving grace is you have the long-term civil servant career professionals there, many of whom I've known over the years and several I have close relationships with today, who do their job, I think, in an extraordinary fashion. They collect facts. They gather information, they analyze all that, and look for prosecutable cases. They also represent the state from a defense perspective. So they do good work. And I think that is the body here that's from the various agencies involved that brought the information forward. And ultimately, the political arm, the head of the organization, it was inevitable. You had to move forward with it, so it got filed. But my strong suspicion, and I sense you and I share it, is that there was an abundance of information to take this matter forward long before September 14th of this year. Is that a fair assessment of your observations?
I may have been born at night, but it wasn't last night.
Yeah.
So, you know, the other thing I want to bring to your attention, this kind of corruption is rife through the political grifting that's going on at the candidate level.
Yeah.
There are candidates who have no chance, who are raising millions of dollars and converting them for personal use. I'm hopeful that someday someone will look at that.
It is going to be a show topic in the not terribly distant future. So appreciate the call, great. Congressman. Always great to hear from you, sir. You got a bad phone there, but great to hear from you nonetheless. Hey, that's it for me, as you can hear by the sound of the music. But stick around. Why, you ask? Well, I'll tell you why. Because you have the lovely and talented Kitty O'Neill. She's coming up next with the afternoon news. I will see you back here on Monday. Have a spectacular weekend.